Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And thank you all very much for bearing in there, especially those people who contribute monthly, going almost 2 months without any Vinnie Eastwood. I had to take an extensive break. It was just doing my nut in, 6 months straight, solid, of at least 2 hours of radio and video publication and sharing it all around and doing all of the organization and everything. It can be quite stressful. And if you don't give the body time to recuperate, you break down kind of like a dead body in the sun, you know? Bacteria starts getting in there. It's just not a pleasant place to be. And the odor is quite foul. Anyway, speaking of foul odors, I mean, getting part of New Zealand's media, you know, becoming part of it, and I'm forcing my way in there with the help of fans and listeners who've been supporting me this entire time. You know, it's been quite challenging. I think one of the things that sort of frustrates me is the fear element. Right? And I'm not talking about, you know, the listener's fear element or my fear element. It's actually people who are afraid to come on this show. People who've got, like, you know, reputations, are afraid that their credibility might be smashed to smithereens if they're seen associating with this terribly inaccurate, obfuscating the issues man, Vinnie Eastwood. And they prefer to go on mainstream media. And, I mean, I completely understand, and I can even empathize. You know, I wouldn't say it even hurts my feelings. I mean, hell, it's not the first time anybody's been wrong. I mean, look, you know, here's what happens. You get tarred with the conspiracy theorist brush anyway, but if you do an interview on this show, you don't get cut off in mid-sentence. And you don't get interviewed for 2 minutes. And you don't get cut down to a 30-second soundbite, son. Okay? It doesn't necessarily matter which media source is associating with you, just so long as they actually give you media coverage, give you a chance to speak. But that's my perspective, because I'm all about cooperation and just straightforward honesty and openness. And that's just not the way the world works. The world is competitive, it's secretive, and it's dishonest. Isn't it? And even that means that even the cooperative, honest people who work within it have to compete against the others. Have to you know, protect themselves from the real nasty ones. That kind of thing. And again, totally understand. I don't really take any offense to it whatsoever. It just seems like lunacy to me. But, you know, that's me in general, isn't it? Everything kind of looks like lunacy when you realize that the world's run by crazy sociopathic scumbags. It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Becomes sort of locked into a little bit of a box and everything starts to reinforce your own bias. You know, oh, this little event happened over here. Ah! It must be some scumbaggery, my mind said to me. And that's precisely what goes down in everybody's minds to a degree, except it's their own perspective. So they go, ah, if I go and associate with this person, X amount of mainstream media will make fun of me. X amount of belligerent scumbaggery individuals who are sociopathic evil people will use it to criticize me, to demonize me, to discredit me if I ever went on the Vinnie Eastwood show. Now, is that not actually valid? You know? I mean, I know a lot of people like the show and a lot of people listen to it. But, you know, what kind of an image am I projecting here? I was just trying to project an image of fun. But apparently, you actually have to listen to the mother effing show in order to have fun and realize that that's what it's about. If you, on the other hand, don't look into it, never listen to it, and never even investigate or think that your claims, what other people say about it, might not be true or entirely or wholly accurately represented of the several thousand broadcasts that I've conducted with almost as many guests on almost as many different topics. But you could just call me a conspiracy theorist, you know, because that's much easier than listening to somebody's entire catalogue, or even so much as perusing, or even so much as taking a Google search and seeing the laundry list of very credible, very interesting, very highly qualified people that have been on this broadcast from time to time, and some regularly. I mean, the other day I shot the first episode of my TV show, right? And, first two episodes, rather. And it was like a day before. It was actually the night before. And I needed some guests, you know. I've got, like, two topics to do. I've got, like, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement and local council corruption. And I think when I started, it was, like, maybe 6:50 in the evening. And when I'd managed to finally finish scheduling all three guests and pass on the details, it was like 7:59, you know, or whatever. In total, it took about 9 minutes, you know. That's actually how tight I am with people, how genuine I am, because I can just call activists who sacrifice, you know, their time and their effort and in much part a lot of the comfort in their lives, so that other people will continue to have a future. And so when I call them and I want to give them some coverage and give them some airtime, or, you know, in this case, be bringing onto a TV show, they're like, yeah, Vinny, no worries, I'll be down. And I've got this kind of assessment, right? There's, if you really, really know me and know me quite well, you'll really like me. If you don't know me at all, and you're somewhat of a douchebag, you really won't like me. If you don't know me at all, and you're a good person, you kind of just will be dismissive and think I'm just some flippant conspiratorial fool. And, you know, I can't force everybody to listen to the show. You can't force people to admit that they're wrong. You can't force people to study anything. And so I just let it go. It's all right. I'll just let it go. I don't feel that bad about it. Maybe I do, actually. In fact, I wouldn't even be talking about it on radio if I felt good about it. In fact, I feel really bad every time. Here we go. This comes to the root of the issue, doesn't it, Vinny, with your layers of freaking psychoses that have been built up on like a decade of activism, and how you try to justify things to yourself and think, oh, wow, I'll just look at it this way and I'll just put it in that perspective, because that's not really how you feel, is it? You know? And we all do this to ourselves. The easiest person to lie to is yourself, because that's usually the first one you lie to, isn't it? I do feel hurt. I do feel misjudged. Because all I'm trying to do is help. And I know that I can. And the very least possible way that I can help is get these people who are being persecuted by certain scumbaggery elements of the mainstream establishment to come onto the show and have a few laughs. At least release some of the tension. That's at a minimum. That's my goal. Supplementary to that, but almost as important, is them actually having the chance to tell their story. Because a lot of times people have told their story many, many times over. And the great thing about having it recorded is that you don't actually have to tell your story over and over again. You can just send somebody a link. And suddenly, revisiting all those terrible memories of all these things that have happened to you isn't required. And you can just try and get over them. While other people can learn about your struggles and strife by listening to an audio or YouTube archive. All right? That's the kind of service I want to provide. Do I charge them anything? No. Do I require that they restrict what they say? No. Do I challenge them on anything or try to, you know, prove them wrong or turn it into some sort of hostile interview or practice an ambush journalism? No. And you'll notice that I don't actually have any, you know, mainstream people that I think are scumbags on this show. I had a number of mainstream people, politicians from leading New Zealand parties and things of that nature. As I said, very qualified people. But here's the thing. The media is chocker full, and everybody should be able to see this if they're still watching television, and you shouldn't be watching television, by the way. Everybody should know that the media is chocker full of their point of view, and they do not represent our point of view at all. Okay? So in order to balance that, you don't show, well, here's their point of view, and then here's our point of view. No, no, no. You completely ignore their point of view. You know why? Because it's no longer relevant. I don't care what the media says. I don't care what the president or the prime minister or the head of Monsanto says. The media report and quote them as if what they say matters. It does not, for it is lies, deception, and scumbaggery in its purest form. Completely ignore it is almost the only defense. Not entirely dissimilar from the way that you get a psychopath out of your life. Block, 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 get a new phone, move to a new address. They can't find you. They're out of your life. Same is the truth with the media. And the reverse is true with good people and good media. We don't get delivered to you for free, loaded with big corporate advertiser money. We barely have enough to survive. You barely have enough to survive. Nobody wants to listen to millionaires who are telling you, you know, money-saving tips and what have you. These people aren't in the same situation. There isn't even enough money in the economy from all the bankster fiat currency debt for everybody to become a millionaire. So the whole trickle-down effect doesn't work. The only thing that trickles down is a freaking plug hole. All the liquidity goes down the plug hole into the hands of the bankers, and nobody else in the media will tell you this. So naturally, I do feel a little incensed. Maybe even a little upset when somebody would be afraid to come on my show and actually tell people these things that they know, because the possible consequences, they might be called a conspiracy theorist by some mainstream lying establishment. Can't get my head around that because I'm not in that position. I don't have a reputation. I don't have any credibility to maintain. That's the reason why I understand it, but nonetheless feel hurt by it. You know what I'm saying? It's important to understand both people's perspectives in any kind of disagreement. Because if you're not understanding the other person's perspectives, how exactly are you going to learn to change yours? And if you're not changing your perspectives on a regular basis, how exactly do you expect to evolve any? How do you expect to get over the person that you were and become and continue to be the person that you are? How do you expect to evolve that organism? You know? I've got this sensation that if I just keep doing what I'm doing, and it's worked so far, eventually these things will not matter to me at all, and I'll be so busy helping people who I can actually help, who actually want to be helped, who aren't in the pocket of the establishment ideology and still living in the past. You know? It'd be nice to be able to bypass all of that. But unfortunately, we live in this thing called society. And it means that people have different views, different occupations, different reasoning for why they do these things that they do. My reasoning for doing what I do is I'm employer-phobic. I get like panic attacks at the thought of gainful employment. I'm not kidding, you know, I sound like I'm joking, but it's not a joke, son. You know, there's a real condition that I made up off the top of my head, just like the medical establishment, and I'm sorry, psychiatry does. Not that the medical establishment doesn't just make stuff up off the top of their head. Oh, we can't explain it, therefore it's a something something blah 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 in Latin. So that people won't understand what we're talking about. You know? And isn't this is my problem. I can't work for people. I work with people. I work with a lot of people. And it's so easy for me. And I make people's life better. Simply by making crappy jokes about terrible things. You know? This comes naturally to me. Because I see terrible things everywhere. And my brain is so messed up that it tries to make terrible jokes out of them just to cope with the things that I see. And that's because of two reasons. I'm intelligent and I've got a temper. A really huge temper. You don't want to see this go off. A couple of people at this network have seen it happen and they're frightened of me. And so they should be. I'm a dangerous person who's not really meant to be trusted with any form of authority. Guess why I've put myself in a position where I can't control anybody, where I don't have any employees. You see? I know the bad side of myself better than other people do. I know how to thwart my own natural instincts by putting bulwarks in place, by making friends with the right people who are different, you know, to my terrible nature. You know? I mean, everybody's like, oh, but Vinny, you're such a nice guy and everything. It's like, while true, again, everybody has a spectrum. And I don't like this whole idea. It's like, oh, there's two sides to the coin. No, there's a spectrum of sides. There's one extreme on one end and the other extreme on the other. And in the middle, that's when everything starts to go grey. There's a whole lot of different things about me that people don't know. And they'd probably stop supporting me, stop listening to me, if they found out X amount of things about my personality, just like it happens every single day with every single talk radio show host. They'll eventually reveal things about themselves to you that you won't like, and you won't trust them anymore. Now, they reveal things accidentally. Okay, I reveal things deliberately, because if you're not completely and utterly honest about the worst side of yourself, when people see it come out, they think it's unjustified. They think it's crazy. You know? And I think that we're afraid to reveal our true selves to each other. The fear of getting judged. And I believe that's a very well-founded fear. If you're, you know, above 6 years old, you would have realized that when you reveal secrets to people, oh my God, they spill the beans to other people, don't they? They betray your trust, don't they? And the reason, well, at least one of the reasons why I'm so honest, pathologically so, in fact, is because of the fact that I'm not operating under the delusion that I'm incorruptible. Okay? So, one day, this may happen to you, may have already happened, you will be tested about whether or not you will leave your conscience at the door and accept a great big reward that you've been thirsting after. But you got to hurt somebody in order to do it. When that day comes, pray that you've got friends like I've got. Pray that you know a lot of people who expose scumbaggery for a living. So as soon as you take that deal, as soon as you start turning into some kind of selfish douchebag and forget the real reason why you're trying to help people in the first place, it wasn't for selfish gain. Soon as you forget who you were and become something else, if you've got those good friends who expose corruption, they'll expose you. And that's my hope. If I do something wrong, I'll be exposed for it. You know, no ego about it. I'm a human being just like everybody else. I can do something wrong. And if I do something wrong, I deserve to be punished. That guarantees that I'm not a psychopath. Psychopaths want to get away with everything. I don't want to get away with hurting people. Never. Never misleading them either. It's even worse. And it's a huge temptation too. You think about it. Click whoring. You seen this? Really big, fancy, scary headlines or whatever. Emergency broadcast. Emergency this. Emergency that. Keep you on edge with the words pandemic and economic crisis. Trying to stop your higher thought processes from coming out. These things aren't right in front of you. Okay, you know what's right in front of you? Your friends, your family, your employers, acquaintances, your neighborhoods, your city. These are the things you can actually do something about. These are the things that you can focus on, and you can find more than enough problems in any direction that you look, if only you care to look. And that's what people forget. So focused are we on global crisis and the day the world will end, that we don't realize that we can stop that world from ending if only we were to look at the world that is around us. Not overseas, not listening to some fear porn DJ. You know, it's not a good way to spend your time, bro. There's a certain point where you'll think, you know, I know enough. I know enough. Or at least I think I know enough. And I'm going to go out and I'm going to start putting this stuff into practice. I'm going to stop talking about it, or rather, just stop talking about it. Actually, we're going to put something into action. Okay? Musicians are like this. I'm a very different musician to most, because when I jam, I always have a recording device going. Always. You know why? Because when I come up with lyrics off the top of my head, I know, absolutely know, that there is a 0% chance of me remembering all of those lyrics and the chords that were being played that I was singing along to off the top of my head, or be able to remember it even directly after the song. It's not possible. So when you're recording yourself, doing your jamming, then you find out you've actually got this massive catalogue of work to draw from. This is where all your creativity is supposed to really go. It's supposed to go into digital format for later reference. A friend of mine said, well, if I recorded it, then it makes the event less special. And I go, really? Okay? You ever been rapping at a bar and the music's too loud and you can barely hear the lyrics? And he's like, yeah? Okay. Do you think maybe if they recorded those lyrics really clearly and were able to take the music out, and then later on pop it into an editing program, sit around with a couple of mates and have a few beers, and work out a way of making the song work, rewriting it a little, and producing an actual song based upon the original content that you created on the night, that would somehow lessen the amount of enjoyment people could possibly get from a song that nobody could hear at the time. Hmm? Sounds pretty stupid, doesn't it? What it comes down to is frickin' laziness. Lack of faith in yourself. Goodness knows how many negative characteristics prevent people from realizing how brilliant they are. Sometimes you just need to hear what you're doing in order to realize whether or not you're really good at it or actually really crap. You know? You ever heard of recording of your own voice and you sit there and you go, oh my God, does my voice sound like that? It's so nasally. You know? It gives you perspective. When you can look at it at that from that third party view, you know, and I think maybe the lack of self analysis is one of the most frightening things to me. You know, it actually is quite scary to see that people could do a whole lot of things and say a whole lot of nonsense for a long time, without analyzing whether or not there's any validity to their beliefs, without going out there practicing them, showing that they really work in reality. Everything's conceptual until you put it into practice. So if you're talking about making this car or building that thing in the backyard, the more that you talk about it, the less likely it is to happen. That's what I've noticed. The less you talk about it, the more likely it is to happen. Because you just go, okay, I got the idea, boom, you go do it. And you have to do it quickly, really quickly, almost without thinking about it. You got seconds to make a decision. Am I going to go and build a nice little outdoor area or go plant some things in the garden? Or am I just going to sit here on the computer and Facebook people for the next 30 minutes and have absolutely nothing to show for it? Mm-hmm. See, time is valuable to me. That's why I record things. Because sometimes the best things happen when the camera's off. In fact, a lot of the times. You know what I'm saying? You only really got one moment to get in there and do what you want. And it doesn't matter what the hell it is you're doing. People forget this because they're always plugged in to the fear porn, to self-doubt, to worrying about the end of the world. Like, don't worry about the end of the world. When it ends, then you can worry about it. All right? Stress causes 90% of all illness. So if you get killed by an illness because you were stressing about the end of the world and you don't actually get to see the end of the world, what the hell was the point? Okay? World ends, start stressing. You know? Stress is a very, very good thing in short bursts. It actually kind of focuses you. Or at least it does to me. When I'm under time constraints, I can accomplish the impossible if I'm stressed enough. The problem is that that kind of response is supposed to be short term. All right? You're supposed to be in those stressful situations for only a little bit until you can get whatever it is done. And this is like a deeply primal thing. If you had to run away from a beast or something of that nature, you know, you're in, you get that stress response. You can run faster, you're stronger. But a lot of times your higher thought functions can shut off. Now, a lot of people think this makes you stupid. And I'm starting to think that there's also another provocative element here. The flow of the universe takes over to a degree. Or at least that's how it's happened to me. Has anybody else experienced this where it's almost like your hand or your mind was guided by something else that day? You accomplished something that you didn't know how you could do it. And you were really stressed at the time. You know? That happens to me regularly. And so I'm thinking sometimes it's like, what do they call it? Faith. I don't know what it is. All I know is that when I've got an exact time frame and I've got an impossible task, I finish the impossible task in the time frame. Cut together three documentaries with, well, I wouldn't say they're documentaries, but three incredibly long videos, presentations by people with multiple camera angles and slides being added in, slideshow presentations for fluoride doctors and things of that nature, and a guy who's written a 52-page dossier, and it wound up being like a 3.5-4-hour video, just cutting out all the tiny little pauses and everything, really meticulous. 3 days that took me, 3 all-nighters. I think it was like bedtime of 5 a.m., 7 a.m., and then 11 a.m. the following morning. And that's just because I had to. You know? You'll be surprised what you can achieve when you got no choice. It's either do it or die. That's what your brain tells you in that stress response. Through those little periods there, boom, you can get a hell of a lot done. But if you're constantly stressed and you're not actually doing anything, sitting there worried about police state operations or whatever. Because everybody's been talking about Jade Helm and acting like the United States is over. Then in a couple of days, the tanks are going to roll in. and everybody's, all the dissidents are going to be rounded up. Domestic control of the United States is starting, and they're going to crash the economy and bring about the global government. Do you have any effing idea how many times I have heard that exact same story in the last 8 years? Almost every year, several times, somebody will be talking about this massive grand plan that's going to take over everything next week. And everybody freaks out about it, like, oh God, we're all going to die. I need to get myself some nice and iodine and some bottled water. And then nothing happens. Nothing. Ever. It happens every single time and people keep falling for it. But the other part of my mind just goes, wait, hold on a second. It's like gazelles, right? There's a lion nearby. Couple gazelles go, ooh, that grass moved a little strangely. I'm going to run away now. The other gazelle just sit there and go, eh, I didn't see nothing. And there was no lion there. And it happens again the next day. The spooked gazelle runs away. And all the rest just stay there. There wasn't no lion. 9 out of 10 times, that's what it is. But the 10th time that there is actually a frickin' lion there, it's the real skittish animals that are the ones that tend to survive. Okay, so at the same time, I'm getting really angry about all the fear porn and people freaking out about the end of the world. I'm also cognizant that, hey, it might be this time. This time it might be real. But I put it in the, 1 to 10 ratio. So if there's an event coming and somebody says, oh, it's going to be a big false flag or whatever, I have a 90% margin for error. 90% likely it's not going to happen. And so far, virtually nothing's happened. Keep telling everybody, everybody keeps talking about this. What was it? 2012 was a big year. You know? All the elites were talking about collapsing the economy. There was the nonsense about the actual end of the world, my friends, with the giant tsunamis and Mayan calendar BS. We're being mind controlled. We're being made not to think. We're being made to abandon our reasoning processes because certain people have realized that if you make people afraid, they will pay attention to your website. They will pay attention to your radio show. They will watch your videos and they will share them and they will go to their family and freak them out. And, you know, fear is addictive. It really is. People are freaking addicted to it. They're like, ah, you know, just putting a big belt around their arm, you know, tapping up the veins with it. Oh, yeah, let's get some of that fear in there, boy. Ah, oh, I'm just going to put that plunger down. I want to get it in my veins. It's just insanity. There is enough to be afraid of from what you can't even see that is happening right now around you. Electromagnetic, wireless radiation pollution, for example. That is hugely effective. Massively dangerous. And it does affect your moods. And probably what media will you wind up watching as well. So you've got to keep your cell phones away from you. They've even got a warning label on it. Don't hold it within 10 centimetres of yourself. How am I supposed to hold it if I can't have my hand within 10 centimetres of myself, bro? This stuff is real dangerous. It's right there, right in front of you. And you know nothing about it. Because you're worried about some massive drill that's going on right now that could be the real thing. And you've been worried about that for decades. You've been ignoring the things that are actually a real danger to you that are affecting you right at this second in favor of worrying about things that have not yet and may never effing happen. Priorities, people! You're trying to be distracted from things that are real. Why? I mean, if you want to be distracted from something, watch something fictional. You know, that's what entertainment is there for. It's supposed to teach you analogies. It's supposed to teach you through creative analogy. Certain moral lessons and things of that nature. You know, little boy who cried wolf, little Bo Peep and her sheep. Goodness knows whatever the barnyard animal characters are supposed to teach you. But, you know, people go, no. I don't like entertainment because it's fake. So you listen to fake alternative media instead. Everybody gets captured. And this is why I talk about the spectrum so much. You'll think that, hey, because I'm a Christian and I suddenly figured out that I don't want to be a Christian anymore, I'll go and become a Satanist. It's like, no. You could have just woken up to something and then gone on to something that was real, not be captured by something stupid. You know? That's what everybody's doing. They go like, oh, this psychopath who I really supported and loved a whole lot, he just betrayed me. And then I'm going to go around now promoting this other person instead. You know, it's like you didn't learn the lesson. Doesn't anybody age anymore? I mean, really? I learn stuff every day. I'm only 30. And I don't know. I'm driving myself nuts. Because half the people that I talk to are twice my age, and they know less than half as much as I do, because I talk to twice as many people their age. You can learn at a geometric rate if you listen to people who are smarter than you. But unfortunately, we're all so sure of ourselves, aren't we? We're so sure that we've got something right that sometimes we talk instead of listening. Sometimes we listen instead of thinking. Sometimes we think instead of acting. And I don't know how many years it takes. I don't know how many experiences you have to accumulate. I don't know how many roads you have to walk down, son. But finding out the difference between those elements, I think, is rather important. So you don't turn into some kind of douche. God! I'm really worked up, man. In case you haven't noticed. You know? It's just been ragging on me. These last couple of days in particular, I've been organizing all sorts of really cool stuff. We're doing like a truther gig. We're doing it like a conspiracy truther pub quiz and everything. And I found a truther who owns a bar. I'm doing a TV show. I'm coming back on the air on American Freedom Radio. I'm nailing down interviews for my documentary, which I'm making in the background. I got so many things going on. That I almost don't even have time to think. And that's what really frustrates me. Because I've suddenly realized something. That you can accomplish more with action than you can just by sitting and thinking about it. And I've been sitting and thinking about things for a long, long time. And I'm starting to get angry with how much of my time and my potential I have made myself waste. Because I didn't know that lesson quick enough. You know what I'm saying? It's almost frustrating. It's like looking into a mirror and seeing your younger self and like screaming out to him, you know, no, don't go into business with that sociopath. Don't tell him your business isn't owned and copyrighted. Don't trust that person. Don't lend that person money. You know what? It's without those lessons, you don't learn anything. You know? Sounds pretty straightforward, doesn't it? You really have to appreciate and incorporate the bad experiences in your life into your current understandings. Because if you simply deny all of your current experiences and think, oh, I'm just going to go airy-fairy and it's going to be all fun. From now on, from here on out, it's all going to be fun. And I'm going to ignore negative consequences of all kinds, because there aren't any, because only the things that I make up in my head are real. That solipsistic type of perspective of the world, where you're the one who makes everything up in your entire mind. you make up what the interactions of 7 billion human beings plus on this planet are doing right now by yourself, son. This is all your imagination. You're imagining my words coming out of my mouth in a way that you don't even speak and giving you thoughts that you couldn't even comprehend, you know? For goodness sake, that's really arrogant. Imagine for a moment that you're a frickin' idiot. In fact, don't imagine. Just accept the reality that you're an idiot. I've accepted this reality myself. There are so many simple, straightforward, common sense things that I just don't know. We've all been made to be idiots. And I say embrace it. Admit it to yourself. Say it with me. I'm an idiot. I'm a freaking idiot. All right. See, now, it doesn't hurt so bad when somebody betrays you. Because I was an idiot. I got taken advantage of. But you don't get taken advantage of once you admit it to yourself, do you? Hey, see, there you go. Can I make this decision? Can I take this action? Well, yes, I can. Why? Because I'm an idiot. I'm reckless. See, you could turn these things around on themselves. You can turn your dark days into starlit nights. That's the thing. Always a bad perspective. That's what's coming over us now. And you'll notice this sort of thing, this dynamic, when you watch, you know, really low B-grade films versus really high A-grade Hollywood films, right? You can see the production value. And it's just the shading. No, seriously. Go and watch a B-grade film and then go and watch a Hollywood film, and you'll notice the difference in the color palette of the images that you're shown. They've shaded and grained the film artificially to make the images look more cinematic. And that's all it is. And the same thing occurs when you look at anything. You're putting your own shades over it. You're saying whether or not it's a B grade or whether or not it's a, you know, you're making decisions based upon shades that you're putting over something by yourself. When the reality is, it doesn't matter whether it's a B grade or an A grade film. The likelihood increases, but it doesn't matter inherently. They can still be a crap film. And they still might be a good one. Just depends how many shades you're willing to put over it. What perspective have you got on it? I've got this real contention, and many people will disagree with me. You know, they may well be right, that we don't know everything, and we should treat ourselves like idiots, but have faith in ourselves and accept the reality bravely if we're going to survive. And stop stressing about things, unless it's right there in front of you, unless you can do something about it. Because if you're stressing about things that you can't do anything about, you're going to drive yourself nuts. You know? Because that situation's not going to end anytime soon. Is it? Is it? Tell me right now. How can you stop Jade Helm? You, by yourself, just like sitting there. You can't, can you? Neither can I. Am I going to warn you about it? Sure. Well, I'll mention it. I don't know that much about it. I've seen the big columns of tanks and things like that. Videos that people have taken of enormous columns of military equipment being shipped via train across the United States into certain areas. Videos that I've been watching for like 10 years so that I've become accustomed to them. And it's like, it's the United States. They have a lot of weapons manufacturers. And when you've got a couple of hundred vehicles that you've just made and rolled off the assembly line, are you going to hire a couple of hundred guys to drive each of those down the road? Or are you just going to pop them on the back of a freaking train? You're going to pop them on the back of a freaking train. And then some truther gets pulled, you know, stops at a train tracks, you know, and he's like, oh, damn. I wish I could have made it. Hand me another beer, Jasper. Oh my God! Look at all these Humvees! Look at all these Abrams freaking tanks! Look at all these APCs! My God, they must be invading! Yeah, bro, because they invade countries by driving their military vehicles on a train that can easily be derailed. You know, they're invading you, bro. It's just, for goodness sake, just stop! And stop the fear dominating your thought process. But, you know, just a moment, just to evaluate a situation. Like, you know, pretend you're a reasonable person for a moment, that you require more than one piece of evidence before making an entire conclusion to jump to. For effing sake. My God. It's so frustrating. Oh, my God. Can we just get out of ourselves? You know? Too busy freaking out to do anything about the thing we're freaking out about. It's insane. It's like we're dogs chasing our own tails. Concrete. Surety. That's what people really need. That's what people really want. And I see this happening in the truth movement ad infinitum, where you'll see, I don't know, one commentator or whatever who you didn't like anyway, bring on a guest who you think is like a disinfo or whatever, and you go off at them, and you accuse them of being a shill or working for the establishment for no other reason than they had on a guest that you don't like. Right, really? Have you seen my pay stubs, bro? From frickin' Stratfor? Have you seen my CIA badge? You know? Have you seen me going to Langley? Have you got anything of any freaking kind that qualifies as quote-unquote solid evidence? And they go, yeah, I got mountains of evidence, mountains of evidence. They always say they got mountains of evidence when they've got none! Absolutely none! And they've made it up in their head. They just go with this conclusion and just go, yep, boom, 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 that's it, that's absolutely right, I'm absolutely right. And anybody who disagrees with me is a come and tell pro shell. You freaking nuts. Just shut up. Go away. You sound really jealous. You sound like you're freaking out about things you shouldn't be freaking out about. You know who's a bigger threat than somebody in the alternative media being a lying douchebag? Your own freaking president, maybe. But at the same time, this is the false justification that people get. You ever notice that you criticize anything about anybody at any time, and there's always somebody who goes, oh, but there's better things that you could be criticized, you know, like applying their own yardstick. You know, it's like, oh, but this is what's important to me. How come you're talking about what's important to you instead? Because I'm me and you're you, idiot. You know, for goodness sake, you can't really make justifications that nobody else can criticize anything unless you agree with it. Okay, it's a stupid mentality, because guess what? We're all individuals with our own perspectives. And if we're all worried and concerned about the exact same thing, there'd be no variation in the human race. We'd probably go extinct. You know? It's like, no, nobody's worried about Coke, and nobody's worried about cancer. Incidentally, Coke causes cancer, so everybody dies. You know? That's how that works. See ya! Hope you have fun with your next incarnation! You know? That's why they give you flowers at funerals. Particularly carnations, because your current one's gone. Okay, how exactly can you quantify this, right? Everybody's at each other's throats, everybody's angry, I'm angry. Jesus. Oh, apologize for the blasphemy, but I just realized I'm turning into a crazy person, you know? It's like watching a car crash in slow motion. It's like, it is just tipped over the scale. I'm sorry, just been off radio for 2 months and not being able to sort of, you know, just sit there for an extended period of time and get things that are on my mind off of it, they tend to bottle up a little bit. It's like a reverse bottling effect, like an hourglass. you do 6 months of talk radio and your hourglass fills up and nothing drips out. Then you take 2 months off and then all of a sudden it's all back down the bottom, and then you got to turn it around and let it all out again. And then it fills up and you got to twist it around. You know, it's a process. So I apologize if I've offended anybody. And understand, of course, that when I say, you know, we're all idiots and you're an idiot, etc., that I include myself in that, and that we're all one and part of the same human family, and I'm not rendering judgment or saying that I'm better than anybody, because I hate people like that. I'm better than you. You should listen to me instead of that other person. It's just like, bugger off, bro. Block and the scum is gone. You know? Hate those people. Self-important. Think what you do is it's operating at its greatest potential when you're attacking people who are doing something with their lives. Right? Is that the maximum potential you can achieve, brother? For real? You don't have anything else better going for you? You have to pick on somebody else? Because you don't want to achieve anything on your own? Make your own imprint on the world. See, that's the thing. A whole lot of people get inspired by the people that they see. It doesn't matter whether you're inspired by a singer or a filmmaker or an inventor or a philosopher. It doesn't matter who inspires you. The best compliment you can give them is to follow their example, not to follow their work and criticize them about it, because then you're not following their example at all. You're not living your own life. You're not being your own being. And you'll find that once you start doing that, you start to give slightly less of a care. I wish I could swear on this radio, but I can't. You give slightly less care and attention and consideration to what other people are doing in their life. Because you become sort of involved in your own. You know, that's, oh my God, it's my life. Maybe I should be paying attention to it instead of somebody else's. But at the same time, a lot of inputs. As I say, family, friends, all these people around you, and you got to look after them. You know, just like they look after you, don't they? I don't even remember how many times, even though my brother and my sisters have quite often thought that I was a little bit loopy, and they're probably right, they still support me whenever I need help, you know, really need it, and so do all the listeners. Now, what I'm looking for now is a break to come up real quick, but I want to raise some money. We need a green screen for the studio. And I need a new hard drive for my computer, because I just found out, that's right, it's actually too small on this computer in order for me to do my work at all. You know, can't do it. It's quite unfortunate. We'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen. I'll give you a little bit more details about that. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio 4 nights a week. That's, I think it's 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern time. I would have no idea, because it's totally on the other side of the world to me. I'm just joking. I mean, like, broadcasting in two time zones for nearly 10 years, and it's like, yeah, it, I think I got used to it after the first 6 months, I think, you know? Your brain just kind of translates times to be other times, you know? For example, Vinny's on at 7 p.m. Pacific time. Well, that's 2 p.m. New Zealand time, you know? Just works like that. It's like you minus the 5 hours and then plus a day. Sounds real confusing, doesn't it? That's why whenever I get guests on the show, I totally just tell them the time zone that they're used to. I don't try to tell them what time in New Zealand time. You know why? Because nobody freaking cares. And even if they did care, there's no way they could figure it out, bro. You know, it's just out of control. And I think I was getting back. I really wanted to read this out over air since I wrote it. on the 29th of June 2015, because it's like really important for people, right? And the article's called, wait for it, Conspiracy Theorists: Why People Think You're Crazy and How to Change It. You know, offensive enough for you? It's a good place to start, isn't it? One day you're going to work, drinking on the weekends with your friends, spending money on things that make you happy. Then several years later, you can't find a job. Your friends don't want to hang out with you anymore. Your family thinks you're nuts. You're frustrated with everything and everybody. You might have become a conspiracy theorist. This scenario is all too familiar, and it's about time we come together to comprehend a very few important things. Who we are, what's happening to us, and how we can deal with it. Firstly, let's define what we are and what we are not. To understand this fully requires the realization that there's a spectrum and a bell curve. So no matter how clearly defined the parameters, there are always extremes on either end of the scale to accommodate a minority. But the bulk of people usually cluster near the center in some form of balance. So firstly, what's a conspiracy theorist? Well, my definition as a conspiracy theorist is a person who absolutely believes, and you cannot convince them otherwise, that powerful people who have a lot of influence actually use their power to maintain or grow that influence. This appears perfectly reasonable at first glance, and many people identify with this mentality, even people who outright reject most conspiratorial information. Secondly, let's note that conspiracy theorists are not big believers in coincidence. A coincidence theorist is a person who believes everything happens by sheer coincidence. There's no such thing as deception, deceit, or backroom deals, and mankind just got over the desire for world domination. Now, clearly to any rational person, this mentality is completely insane. Thirdly, let's define how and why the establishment labels anyone who questions the official story a quote-unquote conspiracy theorist. The how is easy. Just call someone a conspiracy theorist, and the connotations of insane, irrational, dope-smoking idiots come charging in without one shred of substantiating evidence to support the assertion or even 1 second's investigation into that person's claims. This makes the words an effective weapon for conspirators and apologists, not only to destroy their opposition, but to prevent their own followers from joining them because of the fear of ridicule. Conspiracy theorist was a term used by Richard M. Nixon. He called Woodward and Bernstein conspiracy theorists when he was getting nicked over the Watergate affair. He also said, "I am not a crook." It was later found out that he was part of a conspiracy and also a crook. So why do they keep labeling people who tell the truth with this blanketed logical fallacy of ad hominem and appeal to ridicule? It comes down to three main elements. One, they are part of the conspiracy itself and don't want anyone to find out. This is reasonably common, as people directly involved with corruption and scumbaggery cannot disclose that they know certain things or be seen to be engaging openly in dialogues with those who accuse them of such. So when a question is asked during a public meeting that said scumbag wishes not to answer, they simply reply, "That's just a conspiracy theory." The audience then laughs at the conspiracy theorist, who will either sit down angrily or get themselves removed by thugs while the crowd cheers. Number two, they're brainwashed. By far, the most times you'll get called a conspiracy theorist is by an ordinary people who actually have nothing to do with any nefarious activity. It's quite simple. They've been raised in a system of mass media propaganda, government-funded public education, and often intellectually absent forms of entertainment, coupled with a poor diet of nutrient-deficient growth hormone-laden GMOs and sugary drinks. It's no wonder they're unable to think clearly. Number three, they're a conspiracy theorist themselves. One of the less well-known and perplexing elements when you get accused of being crazy by someone who's crazier than you are. Because conspiracy research occupies nearly every kind of research or thought imaginable, it was inevitable that groups of real crazy conspiracy theorists would manage to convince themselves that they're not crazy at all, and instead compensate for their lack of self-analysis by projecting all their madness onto others. Anyone that believes every conspiracy theorist is insane is clearly out of their mind. Anyone who believes that no conspiracy theorists are insane is completely out of their frickin' mind. The element of madness has either been creeping in, laying dormant inside, or has always been dominant in the truth movement. It seems to be getting more noticeable by the day as comment threads and message boards seem to be filling up with posts in all caps with at least 20 exclamation marks after each sentence by fake accounts that have almost no followers, that for some reason always manage to include the word truth, sheep, or Jew somewhere within their names. That's actually the real heart of the matter. To differentiate oneself from those people and instead stay calm, reasonable, well-researched, and personable. Of course, that's an impossible task, because regardless of how awesome you are, you'll always run the risk of getting called names by brainwashed, psychopathic, and crazy people. But at least this way, you and the others like you will be able to quickly identify each other, because few things are worse than fighting people who agree with you and agreeing with people who hate you. What waking up really means. Unlike traditional education and apprenticeships, there's no form of authority there to grade you and prevent you from completely fricking it up. The truth movement is an open source education paradigm, so without any form of qualifications up for grabs, no rules or ranking systems, and no instant go-to pre-approved manuals, all resulting character attributes and defects become the responsibility of the individual who embodies them. Some have advanced to genius levels of understanding, with a profound ability to communicate and help others to reach conclusions for themselves, largely without anger or fear. While others have become so paranoid and arrogant as to believe that they are never wrong, and all who disagree with them are trained and paid government agents assigned to stalk and sabotage them. So what does waking up mean? In a very general way, it could be compared to the word disillusioned, meaning disappointed in someone or something that one discovers to be less good than one had previously believed. I use that word because the majority of things the general public believe are beneficial or benign are in fact 100% pure and unadulterated scumbaggery. So, to go from one belief structure to the other triggers a number of negative feedback loops within our own psyche as the brain struggles to rewrite its own history and experience. An emotional effect similar to the well-known five stages of grief takes hold. The five stages are denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Sadly, some won't make it through all the stages and achieve acceptance. They might be stuck in one very difficult stage for the rest of their lives and create many ways to justify their antisocial behavior so they don't have to take responsibility for it. But anyway, in conspiracy terms, it works this way. 1. Denial. You deny that there's ruthless criminal sociopaths that run most of the world and try to convince yourself that you're still free and continue to work a slave job that you hate for a boss who's a scumbag in the hope that it'll all just blow over. 2. Anger. You get angry that there's ruthless criminal sociopaths that run most of the world, and the fact that neither your friends or family believes you, this makes you resent and direct your anger towards them instead of the ruthless criminal sociopaths. 3. Bargaining. You get over the anger when you realize it's not helping you and try to tone your behavior down when you talk about conspiracy, hinting than rather pointing it out directly. However, instead of telling the truth that people won't believe, you start speaking in riddles that people don't understand. It's at this point that many try to turn back as they begin to doubt that the truth is the truth and discover that it's not worth the time or effort to try and help people. So many abandon this approach and proceed directly to stage 4, depression, without passing go or collecting $200. Number 4, depression. You begin to lose hope. You cry on occasion when thoughts hit you in the night. You retreat inwards, and the amount of human contact you have shrinks massively because you're so down that you depress almost everyone you come into contact with by moaning about how bad it is that you're being exterminated by psychopathic bankers. At this stage, some people who've been involved in this vein for many years get overwhelmed and quit traveling down this road completely. They return to the workforce, stop hanging out with any people who are conspiracy-minded, and ignore the news and most information sources in general. Mostly, it's because it reminds them of how depressing reality is, and that they've convinced themselves that not doing anything to help humanity and keeping their heads down is the only way they will survive what's coming. This also sometimes happens to people in the bargaining stage. 5. Acceptance. When arriving at acceptance, it's important to note that most people will never reach this stage. It's interesting because there are many people who claim that they've woken up, like New Agers, for example, who appear to be stuck in either the denial or bargaining stages in some kind of perverse mind game they play in an effort to prevent themselves getting in touch with any real anger they're feeling. This is a big mistake, obviously, because acceptance of this trauma, of waking up, means completely accepting that the other stages of grief existed as well. You need to accept that you were in denial, accept that you were angry, accept that you'd foolishly tried bargaining your way out of it, accept that you were depressed. Only now do you completely understand the nature of the problem you're dealing with, because you either are no longer part of that problem, or at least clearly see the part you play and what can be done about it. So what's the solution? Most people are still programmed to believe that to every problem there's a solution. While possibly true, the belief isn't born of hope, faith in themselves or others. It's a belief derived from laziness and fear. Someone else will find the solution, share it with me, and eliminate the need for me to do any reading or thinking for myself to gain understanding of the problem. This is a very dangerous prospect, as the world is full to the brim with psychopaths that promise all sorts of glorious solutions that, instead of helping the people, just acquire more power and wealth for themselves, while they use their audience of unthinking, irresponsible dupes as a cash cow and marketing tool. So I'm not going to tell you any one-size-fits-all solutions. I'm not going to lie and say this is going to be easy. I'm not going to oversimplify the problems and say if everyone did this one thing, it'd solve everything. Why not? Because it's frickin' reckless, irresponsible, and borderline retarded. Why do I say that? Because the situation is far too complex for any one mind to comprehend or quantify. Think of the human body for a moment. Just your own body, in fact. Try to quantify every element that currently comprises it, every input and every output. Can you name every single bone off the top of your head? Can you tell exactly what function all your hormones are doing right now and what all their names and chemical and electrical compositions are? Do you know how many times a day you breathe and exactly what quantity of oxygen you consume from the air on a daily basis? What is the weight and composition of your stool, urine, and sexual fluids you expel on average? You see, even if you had to make an analysis of your own body, without constant comprehensive data collection plus nearly a decade of study and an entire lab team, simply answering those questions for a single human being is nearly impossible. So why then do we entrust any one person to provide us with a cure-all for the planet's systems? Heck, it's got an ecosystem, political system, banking system and justice system that are so full of problems, so full of scumbags, and so misunderstood by the general public that it's actually hilarious to suggest that any of them could be perfected in isolation, let alone in concert, with only a single idea. Sound confusing? Of course it does. It's supposed to be. Did you really believe a planet with quadrillions of living organisms and 7 billion human beings would have only one solution to save them all? So let's get back to the body analysis. Imagine for a moment that you just pricked your finger and blood's pissing out of it. What do? You find a band-aid, place it over the wound, and let the finger repair itself over time. The solution isn't to understand the whole system and try to solve all the problems that exist within it simultaneously. The solution comes down to each individual seeing a small part of the problem that they understand and take personal responsibility for solving it by themselves. I know this sounds kind of daunting, and some things are exactly how they sound. Myself, for example, I saw that New Zealand mainstream media was totally dominating the airwaves, and there were no regular shows on radio or top-ranked YouTube channels to oppose the propaganda they were pumping out, or even so much as offering a counterpoint. I looked at myself at the time. I had plenty of money. After several years of telemarketing, I developed a great talent for talking, specifically how to translate complex and uninteresting convoluted garbage into easily comprehensible language. I had a passionate interest in all things conspiracy, and I always wanted to be a filmmaker. So I took personal responsibility for the problem I saw, quit my job, bought an iMac and a camera, started filming public meetings and protests, and learned how to do everything myself. After uploading videos for a year or two, I started a radio show a few years later. The first few years were very tough, and without support from my wife at the time, I surely would have failed. But I didn't ask for help before I started it. I didn't ask for a solution. I didn't try to get a qualification to learn how to do it correctly. I simply saw a problem which others appeared to be making progress on and followed their example. This same approach that I implemented by instinct might also work for others. 1. Try finding a problem that you're passionate about fixing. 2. Pull apart its elements to find one little part of that overall problem that you kind of understand or think you have a solution for, or at least can make a difference by yourself in. 3. Analyze what your own skills are based on and your life experience, and find a way of incorporating your natural talents into your work. 4. Look to see if others have done something similar and follow their example. 5. Taking that first step is very rare, and the vast majority of people will never take it because it requires faith in yourself and a determination to achieve your goals regardless if your family, friends, and entire world is against you. And they will be. But that's only if you're actually motivated to do something. Most aren't. Traditionally, around 95% of population stand idly by while the world is changed around them by only 5% of people who are crazy enough to think that they can change the world by themselves. And they do. The important element is knowing the difference between you and someone you admire. No, you cannot ever be that person who inspired you, and you should not try to be. However, if you do try to be like them, you'll likely refine your own way of doing things as time progresses. A huge mistake is thinking the entire world's problems are small enough for you to solve. An even bigger mistake is believing you're powerless to solve any of them. Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. The seventh man. Statistically, it takes about 7 different people to tell you something contrary to your belief system before you'll consider abandoning it. Not the same person repeating it to you 7 times, but 7 different people. This is a bell curve, of course, so some might only need to be told by one person, and others may need to be told by 100,000 different people over the course of a lifetime. If you're the first person to walk up and someone say, "Hey, did you know the world is run by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery?" The likelihood is they'll call you a conspiracy theorist or some other insult, then ridicule and ignore you. However, if you're the 7th person to walk up to them and say, "Hey, did you know the world is run by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery?" There's a much greater likelihood that this person will say something like, "You know, a lot of people have been saying that lately." And started to ask you questions about it instead of denying it outright or being abusive. Now, unless you're pretty clued up and calm, trying to convince them of any particular element of conspiracy without the oodles of documents and graphics that convinced you just lying around, it might backfire when you start ripping into reptilians, chemtrails, and the flat earth. People are all individuals, and it's very difficult to tell by assumption alone which conspiracy elements they're prepared to accept, and the best approach is to not even try to convince them at all. You weren't woken up by a conversation you had on the streets with a complete stranger for 5 minutes. You woke up because you spent countless hours researching, reading, watching documentaries, and listening to alternative talk radio. No one put a gun to your head and made you do it, and you wouldn't have done it if they had. The fact is, you literally can't wake people up, in the broad sense of the word, because, like you, they also have to undergo the exact same grief process you did. So you can easily point them in the right direction by mentioning a good documentary or maybe a good website, but if you try to list or explain everything you've learned, you're going to overload them. They will stop listening and start thinking you're a crazy person, and then you've really messed it up, haven't you? The best piece of advice I ever got was, don't take yourself too seriously, and don't take what others say about you personally. I thought I understood it the first time I heard it, but it was about a year later that its meaning truly sunk in. What it really means is that you can't force others to think or act the way you want them to. So when you try to force them to adopt a belief, they won't like it, and you will get a massive feeling of rejection. The exact same kind of rejection any salesman gets when people don't want to buy what they're selling. But does that salesman just quit and feel bad for themselves? Some do. But do they revisit the same unreceptive person over and over again? No. They knock on the next door and try again with someone completely different. In conspiracy terms, I call this approach the information grenade. You pull the pin, you chuck it in, and walk away. Maybe it'll blow up in their face later. Having an attachment to the outcome is ill-advised if you're having a conversation. Just change what you're talking about. I found this lesson with my family. When they bring up conspiracy stuff, that's when I talk to them about it. But I no longer bring it up first because I've done so many times already. Remembering that you still have common ground with people is essential to surviving as part of society. The problem is that we forget how we used to get along with people. Truthers often forget that they liked having dinner together with family, swapping stories, talking about music or movies, playing card games, etc. And it's essential that you remind yourself to participate in such non-truther activities, only because to do otherwise means your social circles close up and you're left isolated. I met an ex-vegan the other night. He said that at his house, everything is vegan. Vegan bread, vegan pasta, the whole nine yards. But when he goes out for dinner at a restaurant or a friend's place, he eats meat and animal products. Why? Because if he was full-on vegan 24/7, he knew he'd never be able to enjoy a meal with the people in his life, which is essential for normal social function. The same rule goes for conspiracy theorists. Until you're willing to make compromises, I've just lost my place here. Don't you hate it when that freaking happens? Okay, all right. The same rule goes for conspiracy theorists. Unless you're willing to make compromises for the valued people in your life who don't share your beliefs and keep one foot in the matrix, as it were, you come off like some kind of born-again religious zealot trying desperately to save people. And let's face it, you wouldn't invite one of them into your house for dinner so they can rant and rave about how you're all going to hell if you don't convert. Humor. An essential survival tool for your brain and your social life is having a good laugh. Let's face it, no one, no matter how staunch, how balanced, or intelligent, can maintain their sanity for long without releasing the tension. So if things are getting to you, you're concerned about the Fukushima radiation in your fish, Upset that trade deals are undermining your nation's sovereignty? Or frightened that the US has bought a few million guillotines? Lay off the Facebook for a few days, ignore the news, and watch some comedy. Hang out with your friends. Tell some lame jokes. Just remind yourself that the whole world isn't your responsibility and that it won't fall apart if you take a couple days off. Your first responsibility is to yourself. If you drive yourself crazy by taking yourself too seriously and alienating everyone in your personal life, you're not going to help wake people up, and you're deluded if you think you're awake and they're not. After all, just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? Article by Vinnie Eastwood, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, youtube.com/Mr. News, Guerrilla Media, guerrillamedia.co.nz, americanfreedomradio.com, and realguerrillamedia.com. And I hope people go to that article, Conspiracy Theorists, Why People Think You're Crazy and How to Change It, and share it. Share it around the alternative community, because I see a lot of people freaking suffering because they don't know these things. They haven't learned these lessons that I've had to learn the hard way. And I want to explain this to people, and I believe it helps. It really should. Let's have a little bit more fun. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying. Just a bit more fun. Now, I also wanted to think about this as well. The social media break. It does drive you crazy. And I think Truther Girl Sonia did a wonderful video on this about the drawbacks of Facebook. Now, I'll admit, you know, that I'm kind of addicted to Facebook. And of course, the fake justification that I come up for my addiction to Facebook, as all addicts do, is that it provides about 50% of the hits to my website. You know, that's about it. I use it to share my articles, get the information up there, to ensure that when I interview somebody who's like, you know, had a real rough time and they've got some important stuff to say, that it doesn't just wind up on my website with nobody ever listening to it, you know? There's got to be some way to spread it, get it out there, and get these people heard, and maybe another radio show host will hear it, or maybe a listener will email a radio show host and say, hey, bro, you know, you should get this person on. They're really great, you know? It'd be really wonderful to one day look back and see that so many of these people that I've brought onto talk radio for the first time to tell their stories and what have you, you know, actually receive some traction, some benefit for my efforts, you know, because it's not really so much to do with me. Every, you know, the people who listen to the show already know who I am. I don't care about that. What I care about is these people who don't have their own radio shows. They don't have the outlet that I do to express myself and get over stuff that's really really bad in my life. You know, if you can help people to get that nastiness out, you know, and stop them from bottling it up, it helps. You know, and some people would say it doesn't, you know, that just brings up old stuff or whatever, and well, you know, bottle it, go ahead and bottle it up then, son. That's denial. You know, so I wonder, is it really possible for us to sort of beat the new world order, you know, overall? See, again, going back to that example of the human body, how many inputs, how many outputs, I don't think anybody can answer that question, right? There's trends research, Gerald Celente, and people with track records for actually making really accurate predictions and what have you. And there's other people who have track records for for getting nothing done. You know, it's quite hilarious. Now, I wanted to inform people that they can call in. I wonder if anybody's actually listening right now, and if they would call in. or whether the conference chant is even open. I've got it right here in front of me, and I kind of want to see if somebody would call in just to test out the system. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. So give us a call here at American Freedom Radio, and you can jump on the air and shoot the breeze, preferably with an AR-15. Hey, I wanted to understand for a moment the kind of dynamic of competition, right? Because I get invited on a lot of other radio networks, and I won't go to any of those radio networks. Nah, man, American Freedom Radio is where it's at, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But that's just me personally. And, you know, I'd like to promote other networks and things of that nature, but you really can't. You know? Isn't that strange? Could you imagine how powerful the truth movement would be if we conglomerated and became like News Corp? You know? Like every truther operation and everything just kind of joined forces and just took it straight into the teeth of the mainstream media. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be fun? But it's not going to happen that way, is it? Because, again, you can't have a leaderless resistance in a central control grid. Doesn't work that way. It's more about cooperation. Everybody works independently, does their own thing. I'm going to mess with the New World Order by growing some organic food. I'm going to mess with the New World Order by not getting my kids vaccinated. I'm going to mess with the New World Order by homeschooling my kids instead of sending them to a public brainwashing institution. Okay? It's just like that. There's so many little simple things you can do, because the New World Order is screwing you over in six ways from Sunday, including on Sunday. You know? There's very little, shall we say, wiggle room here. You just have to accept the reality that there is a bunch of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery running the planet, and without you, and I'm talking specifically to you right now, without you, everything falls apart. When you play your part, on the other hand, everything starts to come together. So I'm relying on you. I'm counting on you. Everybody is counting on just you to play your part by messing with the New World Order any way you can, any day you want, whenever it's possible. New World Order wants you to not care about people. Start caring about people. New World Order wants you to walk down the street and just be looking at your smartphone. Don't look at your smartphone. Smile at a few people. All right? Any tiny little creative outlet. And it's so much better if somebody doesn't have to tell you what those creative outlets are, isn't it? Because then you don't have to sit there listening to somebody. You could be out there freaking doing it. Out there freaking doing it, you know? Maybe you've had an idea that you've been thinking of for a while. It's been in the back of your mind. And almost every single time you get some time to think about yourself, it hits you. And it goes, oh man, I should be doing that. And if you're remembering what that is right now, you have 5 seconds to turn off this radio show and start going to do it. Start going to do it. You don't really... See? All right, I've lost you. You know, and for those of you who still are listening, I wonder, at what point do you reach? When you think that you've done enough listening. Is it once you start getting involved and you realize that it's actually a lot more gratifying than just listening? Just being a spectator? Not ragging on the spectators. Everybody got responsibility. And ultimately, without spectatorship in the truth movement, there would be nobody to follow. There would be no information streams. There would be no participation. There wouldn't be countless thousands of groups on Facebook about it. Okay? Spectatorship is part of the reason why the home team wins most of the time. And that's part of what social media is, essentially. It's a big stadium. And everybody's vying for different teams. Now, isn't it nice when you realize that you're on the home team and you're in a group of people that are on that same kind of playing field, that same kind of wavelength, you know what I'm saying? I could freaking colonize the internet. In fact, we're already doing it. Nobody can even post a Britney Spears video about or anything these days without some truther going, "Yeah, I'll post a 9/11 as an inside job video in their comment thread." Give a big finger to the NWO. That's my daily bread. All right, time to go play some video games and smoke weed. Yeah, that's what truthers do. Don't deny that you do it, bro. Don't deny that you do it. You know, remember, the best stage to get to is acceptance. Just, okay, I don't know. In fact, I think it was Thomas Sheridan. He was like going on about these about stoners. He was criticizing stoners. And what I didn't realize at the time is that he wasn't talking about stoners. He was talking about potheads. I know that sounds confusing. Well, let me tell you the difference between a stoner and a pothead. A stoner is somebody who smokes weed all the time. A pothead is somebody who only wants to smoke weed in terms of recreation. Like, that's what they live for and nothing else. They don't get anything else done apart from smoking weed. And that is their objective. Okay? It's the difference between a stoner and a pothead. Stoners often get stuff done, and they just do it to relax, you know, they come home after work or whatever. Man, the amount of people in New Zealand alone that smoke weed, that you don't even know that they smoke weed, is astronomical. Everybody keeps it private, you know, to themselves or whatever. And it's only once something like Denver happens when you go, okay, there is a cloud of smoke of volcanic Yosemite National Park eruption volume coming off of downtown Denver the day after weed is legalized. You know, I didn't know there was that much weed there. I didn't know that there were that much people who smoked weed there. It's like, actually, they were everywhere the whole time. You ever walk down the street and you go, smell weed, and then something gone. You know, there was somebody with like an ounce on them just walk right past you. You didn't even notice. All right. Stoners are everywhere. And you know, but potheads, oh my God. You know, get a hobby. You know, do something with yourself. And the same goes for freaking alcoholics who just go home by themselves and just sit there and watch TV. What the hell is the point in that? You know, you could be drunkenly operating machinery. That's a lot more fun. I remember I had a megaphone recording. I went to do volunteering at a eco festival kind of dance party thing called Splore. They have every year now in New Zealand. And I brought my wee megaphone along, and it does these recording things, and I can do these like weird voices through it or whatever. And one of the messages was done with, you know that kind of robot voice that you hear at the big music festivals or whatever. Drink plenty of water, you know that sort of thing. what was it I was saying? If you see drunk people being violent, please ask them to drink more and drive home. And like, we were walking past the security guard, and this drunk lady was like getting in her face and everything and yelling and screaming, and I just play the megaphone message, and everybody just diffused the whole situation. It was like a whole crowd of people all clustered around this kind of like fight with the security guard that this drunk lady was about to have, and they all just started laughing at the drunk lady and just dispersed like within seconds. It was like amazing. It was like I threw a grenade into that cluster, bro. You know, it's good to have a laugh. It really is. And sometimes really bad jokes are all there is to laugh about, but at least it's a laugh. You know, it's not that serious. It's just the end of the world. Ah! God. Everybody's so serious. Everybody's so stressful out there, man. Why are you being like that? I got this, I always start off sentences with, I got this, you know. I don't, actually, you know. It's unfortunate. But anyway, I would like to see if somebody would be able to call into the show. 218-339-8525. We'll see if anybody's actually listening in the United States. Because it's, you know, I've been off radio for 2 months. So, you know how long it's going to take me to, you know, for people to click or for me to tell everybody or announce them that I've come back on radio? It's going to be somewhat of a long time. But conveniently, that's why there's archives at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Right on the homepage there, there's a little slider with all these images coming across or whatever. And I'll post one show there as often as I can, usually 4 days a week. On Monday through Friday, Monday through Thursday in the States, Tuesday through Friday in New Zealand, 4 days a week. I'm doing 2 hours of talk radio. It just feels good to say that. I'm doing talk radio 2 hours a day, 4 days a week. Yeah? Could you imagine yourself saying that? Have you actually got a talent, you know, gift of the gab? Something like that. If you record something of yourself, like maybe, I don't know, like a 10-minute show. Maybe write it or just do it off the cuff. Let's see what kind of talent you got. You know, you might get a show on American Freedom Radio. Because soon, and it's been happening, me and the network owner Danny are just exhausted right now because we're both running around in all these different directions, building stuff up and putting fires out and goodness knows whatever the hell else is going on. And we want to fill up the network, right? 24-hour programming. Wouldn't that be choice? 24-hour a day, every single host on the network has actually got real talent. You know, that's what I like about this network. That's why I'm staying on this network, because you can't tune in to anybody's show and think that this person isn't good at what they do. You may disagree with them, you may not like listening to them, but you have to admit and stand in awe at the talent the hosts on American Freedom Radio have. You know, it's quite extraordinary, you know, that they've been found. People you wouldn't even previously hear of are suddenly ridiculously awesome. And they've got talk radio shows and they're getting the word out, they're helping people, discussing real issues about things that matter for a change. Not sitting there waffling and talking about their dog and fashion and things that don't even have any consequence. Just getting so bored with it all. You know? How exactly can you prioritize being bored? You know? It's like, no, I don't want to have really talented A-grade talk radio. I want really average B-grade talk radio. I want a really mainstream, polished talk radio that talks about absolutely nothing because that's what's popular. You ever notice that? The times when you get the most calls in, that's when you're dealing with popular issues, you know? And popular issues are usually issues of little consequence, you know? Sometimes, rarely, but sometimes, they take callers on mainstream talk radio about conspiracy theory stuff. Like, I remember, if you go to my YouTube channel and search 9/11, it might be in there. 9/11 Radio Live, I think it'd be a good search term. Search 9/11 Radio Live Vinny Eastwood. And that should return a result of, I think, for about 2.5 hours on September 11th, I think this might have been 2010, 2011. People were calling in about 9/11. And I cut out all the ads and everything for everybody, and I just put that on YouTube because it's gratifying. It's validating. You can see that on a day as auspicious as 9/11, if people are given the opportunity to speak out against the false flag terrorism and scumbaggery, they do. In massive numbers. Caller lines clogged up. Why don't they do that every day? And I think it's because a lot of people, you know, they just want to be able to listen to something in their car when they drive around. Isn't that about it? Or at least that was how I listened to mainstream talk radio. I don't, you know, go home and go to my computer and go, oh, some mainstream talk radio. That would be the shiznit. No. Just no. Unless there's somebody I know that's on it and I want to record their show for them. Because that's another thing. They've got archives, but they disappear after a little bit. You know? I like having permanent archives, stuff that's actually on there, so that 5 years later you can listen to a show where I call into Radio Live in Auckland at, like, 9 o'clock at night and talk to talk radio show host Kerry Woodham and make her laugh, you know, and have a good time and talk about some real stuff just for a minute. Because people underestimate the value of mainstream media. All right, and I know that sounds ironic coming from me, but luckily I listen to people who are smarter and or more experienced than I am. Because I don't think that I've got it all figured out, because I'm only frickin' 30, and I'm not God. So Penny Bright, enlighten me about this. Everybody will agree that mainstream media tells you a whole bunch of BS, right? However, every once in a while, a truther will get on and say something really important. Or the reporter themselves will do a story about something that's really important, that's totally along your vein of thinking. But because you ignore mainstream media, because you throw it out, when those little things happen, you don't get to hear about them. So it's almost like robbing whichever activist managed to get on there and get some support from the general public of your kind of, you know, participation in it. And I was like, well, you're actually right. And you can't go up to the media and just go, oh, you're douchebags, you're scumbags, and compete with them or try to talk down to them or whatever, because you're nothing. You know, I'm nothing. I can't, you know, go up to mainstream media. People are getting paid, like, I don't know, $70,000 a year. You know, plus free trips to Tahiti, Gucci handbags, and the whole nine yards, that they haven't got anything sussed. They've obviously got something sussed, even if it's selling lies for criminal scum. They've certainly managed to work out a niche for themselves. And just occasionally, that douchebag reporter isn't actually a douchebag. And you do disservice to yourself and your entire movement by attacking them and calling them as such. And I realise the irony of how I phrased that. You know? And, you know, I would like to work with mainstream media people. There's no way I'm going to go and work for anybody who will be on somebody's payroll or have somebody else's schedule to keep or whatever. No. I'm a free agent. Man, I'll make my own schedule, you know? We will be there at an agreed time. You ain't going to tell me to do something. All right? Otherwise, I'm gone, you know? 2 seconds. I'd be like, you're ordering me around? Out the door. You know? Really? Never going to put up with that again. Somebody wants to ask me to do something? You know? Morally obligate me into it? You got me. I'll be there, man. But it's just the big problem with authority that I have. And everybody's got that, isn't it? So you imagine you're doing your gig, you know, whatever your job is, and somebody comes along and tells you how evil you are, you know, for you doing your job and everything. But when you personally haven't actually done anything deliberately evil, you might have just been an idiot for quite some period of time. But you don't like it if somebody comes out and point out, hey, right, you've been a bit of an idiot. And here's why. I don't receive it that well. What you do is you go up to them and you show them some things and you go, hey, bro, you remember when you reported that such and such and blah, blah, blah and whatnot? Well, I did a little bit of digging. And it turns out that it's actually this way and I've got the documents to prove it. I just thought I'd let you know, bro. Have a good day. You know, information grenade. Blow up in their face later. No obligation. You don't have to worry about it. It's all good, bro. You're putting too much freaking responsibility on their shoulders. You're only human. And who knows? Maybe one day you'll be watching the mainstream media and they'll be reporting on the death of the New World Order. How it got exposed. And now it's just mainstream news. Yeah, there's a new world order, and everybody needs to be motivated to fight it. Man, that day would be great. You know, I often live in perpetual hopelessness, because to feed myself hope only makes the despair grow. Mad hope. Just a fool's hope. That we can win. That we can overthrow them. Whilst dealing with the, you know, assumed reality that, you know, we're just going to get subsequently exterminated someday. You know, just like, yeah, and we're gone. But I don't care about that. You know, some things are worth dying for. And the free human race, I'd probably say that's right up there. List of things to die for. Preventing enslavement of the entire human race by ruthless pedophiles. Murderers? Psychopaths? These demons in human form? Yeah. Damn right it's worth dying for. Certainly worth suffering for. Certainly worth the self-sacrifice. Yeah, could you imagine if the Greatest Generation just said, ah, no, I don't want to get shot at. I'm not going to go and fight those Nazis. They sound really scary. You know? Come on. Certain times in history, the obligation is upon you, and you have to answer destiny's call. You have no real choice in the matter. It's called a moral obligation. And if it costs you your life, if it costs you your family, if it costs you your sanity, so be it. But you have to make that decision yourself. Nobody can force you to make it for yourself. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Visit the website and donate today to support this broadcast. Thank you so much for your time.